Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to
Love Letters Live. And this is a radio show about love letters, just that. How to write them, who should get them, which is, by the way, anyone at all. They're not just for romance. They're for anyone for whom you feel love and gratitude and decide to put it on paper and mail it and make somebody else's day and life better.
And what's so exciting, one of the things that's so exciting about this show is that every single love letter is different.
Yes.
And each of our guests has a great story and letter to share.
Yes. So we're just going to go right to our guest today. And our guest today is Janet Sassoon Upton, prima ballerina. And I do wish it were one of those television moments because I wish you could all see her. And I'm just going to go right to you, Janet. And why don't you just for a minute talk about prima ballerina and what that means as opposed to ballerina?
Well, there is a pecking order. And as a little girl, when I was in Paris, you enter as a petit rat. Petit rat means little rat. And then you are crochet, corps de ballet, and then first soloist, a second soloist, and so forth. Then if you are, you really can stay long enough and have a certain gift and talent and a great determination and love, you might make ballerina, which is one in every 10,000 even gets to be in a ballet company, by
really?
The way. And then if you even dance for many years as a ballerina and a company takes you as prima, which is first ballerina. Now, there's one over me, and sadly, because of an injury, I had to stop before my time. And I really, in my heart, wonder, because there are very few in the world that get to be prima ballerina assoluta.
Oh.
And in my time, there was Natasha Makarova, the Russian who defected, mm-hmm. whom I coached for 15 years.
Oh.
And Margot Fonteyn was, when I was a little girl,
yes.
was prima ballerina assoluta, I would say.
Well, talk about when you were a little girl. Could you tell us a little bit about your family and the name Sassoon and just a little bit about what your history is?
Well, this is
and how soon you knew that you were a dancer?
Well, the Sassoons obviously came from the Middle East, that is from Iraq into India. My father's family is very well known in India. And my mother fled Iraq. It seems everyone is always fleeing Iraq when she was a baby and went into the Dutch East, well, Singapore.
So actually. What year would that have been?
I guess that must have been in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to school in Singapore, and then finally in school somehow in Rangoon, and my father was in school in Rangoon. They knew each other, but they were not friends. Mm-hmm. They both ended up in the Dutch East Indies, which is now Indonesia, and that is where they met, fell in love.
Mm-hmm.
It was told that my father came with a gun because my mother had another suitor. And so he very dramatically brandished the suitor away with a gun. But that was a great love affair.
Now, this was a family of importers? Was that
importers and exporters. Uh-huh. And Daddy worked later in China as well,
mm-hmm.
With great uncle Sir Victor Sassoon. And there are still many, the Hong Kong docks, they're still in existence. In Shanghai,
mm-hmm.
there are the Sassoon buildings, and the Cathay Hotel was owned by Sir Victor Sassoon. So we have a rather illustrious
yes.
background.
So what did they want from you? What did they hope for you when you were a girl?
Oh, dear.
And what did you let them know?
My father was a very old-fashioned mentality
mm-hmm.
and wanted university, marriage, and children.
Mm-hmm.
And I denied him all three except the marriage at the end.
Yeah.
But No, I knew I wanted to dance when I first saw Romeo and Juliet at 5 at the Opera House stage, and I turned to my mother and I said, I will be Juliet one day.
Oh.
And I was.
And what did your mother say when you said that? Was that just...
She smiled and had the good sense, because she had had some ballet in, behind her parents' back, by the way, that you really don't start until 7. And I started with the San Francisco Ballet at age 7.
Oh.
And I was immediately put into the little girl parts of opera and Nutcracker and grew up in the company as a soloist to ballerina roles before I then left for Paris.
I was going to say, you've danced all over the world, I know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I then studied for 1 year in Paris with the great Russian teachers that were there from the time of the Tsar, and they were very old, so I got in at the end of an era.
But how amazing to span so much history in one...
Yes, actually, I was very lucky, age-wise, to be able to do that. A few more years, and those teachers were not there. I mean, one was 92, the other two were 72.
And still teaching.
Yes, Igorova, Prebojenska, Matilda Kishinskaya, who was the Tsar's mistress. So, you know, that was quite an exciting time. And being in a company like the Grand Ballet du Marquis de Cuevas, we were spoiled.
In what way?
Everywhere we went, we had an entree to everything. We just had to say, je suis avec le grand ballet du Marquis de Cuevas. And it used to be a rather joke, that phrase, amongst the dancers of, oh, let's try it here. You know, oh, get into a movie for free.
Oh, how wonderful. So respect for it was enormous.
Absolutely.
As it is today, I guess. You know, it has those things don't change.
It still means that you were in a company that every really good dancer of that epoch really went through the hands.
So now your parents, how are they reacting at this point?
Well,
your father?
They had no choice. You know, I went on and I succeeded.
But they still must have had some feeling here and there.
Well, my mother was very pleased. My father was always grunting about it and saying I should be doing something else that isn't so hard. And that he could afford a very golden life for me. But I never told him once that I had run out of money. And my girlfriend, Jocelyn Vollmer, who's a ballerina, prima ballerina, and older than me, who I was always with, we would sit on the sidewalk and giggle our heads off, eating Russian meatballs and brown bread, because our salaries didn't go very far. But we did what we loved, and it was a marvelous experience to be in that company. You learned 45 ballets, and all the classics were danced all the time.
Now, did your father ever come see you?
No, not in that company,
sadly. When did he finally see you?
He saw me when I was in South America dancing in Caracas with the Berlin Ballet. And what can I say about that? He was excited, but, you know, he wasn't about to let me know that. And he had lots of friends there. And so I was swept away with his friends.
Now, I can see sitting here that you have two letters with you. So may I ask about your sweetheart and the man you did marry? How did you meet him? And
well, how I met him was that I was making strawberry jam with a girlfriend of mine, Veronica DeRosa, in the Napa Valley. And we were full of sugar and strawberries, and she finally said to me, oh, I've invited someone for dinner. Why don't you go change into a little dress or something? And which I did. And I came out, and I was introduced to this man who was nice looking, but, you know, I didn't pay much attention to that because I didn't think of anything. And he said, well, at last I meet the Black Pearl.
Oh.
And I looked in shock, because that was a phrase that was given to a very beautiful, wonderful ballerina, Tamara Tamanova, whom I worshipped. And she's, of course, dead, long dead. But some news magazine picked that up, and when I was dancing, said, "We have now a young, new Black Pearl."
And he knew that.
And he knew that. And you really wouldn't have known that unless you were an avid dance, you know, dance-o-maniac.
Yes.
And this man really was. So he was a ballet to me.
So you paid attention to him right away.
I paid a lot of attention to
now,
him.
Now, tell us about your wedding and your courtship, and how did you say yes to him? How did he ask you?
Well, he asked me sitting in the car.
Mm-hmm. Not that night.
No. A long time. Actually, 2 days after, which the letters will be a part of that, I went to London for a hip surgery because they did a newer method. And being a dancer, I wanted the new method where they don't put in steel. Mm-hmm. They just changed the you know,
ball and soccer.
Ball. Exactly. And Edward Villilla of New York City Ballet had that surgery, and I knew about it through another friend, and I'd gotten all the information about Mr. Freeman in London who does the surgery. We were not doing that surgery in America yet. Mm-hmm. The Medical Association didn't okay it. However, they are doing it now, obviously. But I had gone to have that hip surgery, and when I came back, 3 days later, John parked the car near the piers, and that is where he proposed.
But you got this letter first.
Oh, yes.
Okay, let's go to these, because love letters is what we do. And do you want to say
this? Quickly remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live. We hope you'll join us every week at this time.
Thank you. So I'm just going to ask you to read this love letter that you got, I'm guessing, when you were in the hospital.
Yes, I did.
And I mean, the stationery is this creamy, thick, beautiful, meant to last forever paper. And I can see the date's 1986. And his handwriting is in the most beautiful flowing ink. Every line is as straight as a ruler.
And this is before you were married.
Yes.
This was absolutely before I
was
married.
Okay, you read.
I'm going to start with what he had taken me to the airport. So he says, "I had pleasant thoughts driving in from the airport, most of them triggered by seeing you in the magazine shop. I saw you in a flash of clarity, as though I had not seen you for some time, and I greatly loved what I saw. My wife..." Oh, I guess we were married. Sorry. So this was probably not on the time I went into the surgery.
Okay.
This was probably going on tour. "My wife, dark and sweet, her little head darting about with its unique fashion, looking like a sleek seal. I was so happy with the sight that returning, I thought of that previous time a bit over the 3 years passed. Now, when I had put you on the airplane, here it comes, to London, and knew that I very much wanted to marry you, all doubts resolved. It was so clearly right. Now I had other thoughts, some sad, that if I were to lose you, I should be destroyed. Some happy with the knowledge that you were my wife, and that I was so fortunate to have found you and to have my return, my love. I am now beginning to understand the closeness that couples have who are so suited to one another, and understand the grief which one must feel on the death of the other. I always could appreciate that grief. Now I can feel it. Of recent, upon awakening, I have been struck with thoughts of mortality. John Upton, who sailed on with confident outlook. I hope that I never lose that outlook, but I also know that those thoughts come from my love for you and how much I would lose were you to die. Selfish, yes, but natural, I guess. My dear wife, may you take comfort in the knowledge that your husband loves you most thoroughly and can see no happier fate than in having you for a mate until the end of his days. With my much love, my dearest bunny, which he used to call me, John. P.S. To sustain you, Trader Vic's is expecting us on the night of your return.
Oh. That is an amazing letter because it does so much. It's now and it's forever and beyond.
Yes.
And then dinner tonight.
Yes, exactly.
It's just a wonderful...
And also, I mean, there is one thing that I think some marriages lack, and that is the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have a lot of things that you love about someone, looks and so forth, but in the end, what really holds you is to be soulmates.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I think God has been so good to me to give me that thing that I have in ballet. It was my soul that danced. Mm-hmm. And in my marriage, it's my soul that loves. It really is.
How beautifully said.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I can get my breath for a minute.
Do you want to read us a letter that you wrote and tell us when that was?
Well, this is when I was in the hospital, I think.
So he didn't go with you to London for the surgery?
No, he didn't. I don't know where to begin.
Well, you just pick a place that says what you want.
Yes. It's on a piece of binder paper, so it was in the hospital.
Yes.
And I'm making comment on that because I love beautiful paper. And I put, darling John, old life.
I just want to interrupt for a minute, but you got this paper because that's what the nurse had?
Exactly.
That wasn't in your hands, your choice.
No.
So your love for him overrode your desire for how you did it.
That's exactly right. I had to take what she gave me.
Okay.
Darling John, oh, life is tricky. Here I am. No paper, pen, etc. I got this from one of the nurses.
Oh, okay.
I wish I had my hair washed and nails cleaned and polished. Isn't that so like a woman?
Yes.
And I say that, so like a woman. Or like this woman. I could just giggle my head off right now as so many funny images run amok. Janet is impossible, because that was one of our favorite expressions. I could not take my eyes away from you today, as every time I looked at you, I melted a bit inside. I love you so much, and I love looking at you, knowing that you are my husband, my love, my dearest, funniest, beloved. And I didn't even have a nice piece of paper to write this on. We never need to think about such things as every day I would need the best piece of paper to write or say the one thing that would be the last thing to write or say to you, whom I love with all my heart. Please take care of you. You looked pitiful with your dripping nose. He must have had a cold. John, darling, don't ever forget how much you are loved by your wife. Do you know how much I love being your wife? I mean in the true, deep sense of being your wife. Nothing could ever be so fulfilling and completely joyful as that, being your wife. Thank you for making my life complete and so rewarding. Now I can go to sleep. All my love, your wife.
Wonderful. Just wonderful.
Well, I guess every person you interview must feel they have a unique marriage. But I really feel that.
Oh, you know, I think some people have different kinds of marriages. And I think there are people who have marriages where they like each other and they love each other, but it's not to this depth of connection. I think that's really a really unique and beautiful thing, and not everybody has that.
Well, I think also I had a profession that really was consuming, and this was not a 20-year-old marriage. We were in our 40s.
Yes.
So, you know, if my profession was so filled with compassion and total emergence that then I think the marriage is doing the same thing.
Well, you're so evidently a woman who is able to reach that depth of feeling in many areas. So how lucky you are, and also John.
I think that God has been very good to me.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing those. I just want to say that nobody can see, these two letters are so beautifully cared for and treasured. There isn't a wrinkle in them. I mean, they look like they have been written a week ago. So I suppose you will keep them always like that.
Oh, I certainly will.
Yes. Okay.
You know, I want to go back to something, Janet, that you said. You said soulmate. Mm-hmm. And I think that term is used a lot and probably in different ways. To you, what does soulmate really mean? Can you articulate that?
Yes, I can. I think what's inside of you, inside, and in German it's Seele, and I often use the word soul, that dance should have soul, music should have soul, a person should have soul. And maybe it's the last thing that leaves your body. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps it's the first thing that's important in mm-hmm. your body. Mm-hmm. And so whatever, when someone says, where is your soul? I always say, it's underneath somewhere, underneath my heart. Mm-hmm. I can't define the word as anatomy of the body, but I think it's the inner self, the true inner self, mm-hmm. and ideas that you don't even project mentally out loud, but that you keep inside of yourself, mm-hmm. perhaps. And once in a while, that connection comes to another person's inside, mm-hmm. and you connect inside, not only with the wedding ring or wedding mm-hmm. band, mm-hmm. As we did, and most unorthodox, in a most unorthodox fashion, because we were different religions, mm-hmm. so we were married twice. Mm-hmm. But you know, that inner self that connects and ties a knot with somebody else's inner self.
Well, obviously you had that soul with dance. I mean, other people can do the same steps that you did, but that person would never become a prima ballerina.
You're absolutely correct.
Because even the same steps, you gave it something else.
Yes, and I have to say the critics noticed that. She dances with heart and soul.
And you know, although nobody can really define it or say how it gets in us or when it leaves, everybody kind of knows what it is. Yes. We all use that word with great authority. We have the feeling for what it is.
Well, maybe sometimes we misuse it.
Could be, sure.
Because I think it's the utmost word that excels happiness or contentment. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the most important thing, I think, in a marriage.
Yes, and so when you are together with your soulmate, you are together one creature.
Yes, and it doesn't matter if our beauty fades or you get older.
I have a feeling yours won't.
No. I don't know about that.
So do you, for example, know what John is thinking at all times?
No, I don't. He's a very private individual. And had very much in worrying about my coming here today to expose him. But no, he's a very private person and very knowledgeable person. I always say it's because you studied Latin, and I'm always jealous that he knows the meaning of every single word, and he could describe all the Corinthian things to me, and the Ionic and the Doric and things like that. But I had to see him in his vineyard with a little plant, and I watched him planting that plant, mm-hmm. that's now a big tree. And I thought, that has to be a man with a great heart who leant over so lovingly watering that plant. And that was one of my first visions of him.
And you've given, it sounds to me, you've given yourselves over to the other in total trust.
Completely.
You never look like you have to be concerned at all about
And we have no secrets.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. I would tell him anything.
It's wonderful. Now, how long have you been married?
It will be August 7th this year, 25.
Oh, nice.
Your silver anniversary, how lovely. Yes. Well, congratulations. Yes. And how wonderful to find that soulmate.
Well, I think that was very much God's love to me, because I never thought it would happen.
And the sign from God's love to you, I mean, the sign was that he came to you with the secret password.
That's
knowing
true.
That you were the Black Pearl. I mean, just...
Yes, that's rather funny. And as you
really?
See, I am wearing a Black
yes,
Pearl
I do
with
see
my
that.
Wedding band.
Yeah. Well, this is just lovely. This is an important love to share, and I thank you so much for doing that with us.
I thank you so much for interviewing me.
Wow. Pleasure to have you here. Janet, we have a letter today to Dear Janet. People write in and want to know what Janet Gallen has to say. Here's a letter from one of our listeners. Dear Janet, would there ever be a time when a love letter would not be needed? Say, when a gift is so tremendous and so obviously appreciated that no words can express the gratitude. I'm thinking of an article I read recently, how a stranger donated a kidney to a 9-year-old girl who was going to die soon unless she received a transplant. The girl and her family know who the donor is and have said in words and to the press that they are indebted to her forever. How can you top that?
I don't think you have to top that. I think that's perfect. And I think saying it to the newspapers and saying it all over town is just wonderful. And you're right. Some things are so huge that expressing the love and gratitude for it is difficult, it seems. But I think just saying that on a piece of paper and stamping it and mailing it, it's a different gift. It's different than seeing it. You have that in your hand forever, just like Janet has these letters in her hand forever. I don't think anything tops that.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, even if you've said it in words,
yes,
still
I think,
say it on paper.
And we say that all the time. It doesn't matter how many times you've said it in words. Putting it on paper gives it a different and deeper life of its own that other person can have forever.
Right.
And that other person's children can have when you're no longer here. Your words are still beautiful and there.
Right. Wonderful. Well, it's our program is coming to an end for this week, and we want to remind our listeners to please visit us at www.loveletterslive.com. You can contact us by clicking the contact button. tell us about a love letter that you have or that you've received. Have a question for Janet. If you have something to share with our guest today that you would like to share, we'll pass that on.
And I just want to say to you, if John would like to come do one in return, we'd love to hear from him.
We'll
ask him. Okay, and I just want to remind everybody that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion.
Right. So we encourage you to put your loving thoughts into words while you still have the chance. And please join us again next week at this time on Love Letters Live.
Yes. Bye.
So goodbye for now.